Hi, everyone. My name's Joe. I'm an alcoholic.
Joe.
My sobriety date's January 1st, 1987. I've got a sponsor and a home group. And I'm newly a resident to the Desert Southwest. Just moved into Phoenix. Got there the day before Thanksgiving and almost immediately got a home group. It's Young Recovery in the Creek. It's a Thursday night meeting. It's a book study, and we read almost all the same literature that you read at the beginning of your meeting. So that was really inspirational to me. And I serve as the resident old guy for the young people's meeting. And I know it doesn't look like it, but I used to have brown hair. And when I got sober at age 20, I had brown hair. And I ran around a group in Washington, D.C. with a bunch of other young people, and there was a couple of older people that had a little bit of life experience and a little bit of sobriety that helped keep us from essentially destroying the place and taught us how to live sober. And so as a means of paying it forward, that Thursday night meeting, even though I go to some other meetings with people with a lot of time and stuff, that's my home group. That's where I'm of maximum service to Alcoholics Anonymous, is to sit around and watch a young person do something they should absolutely not be doing, and pull them aside and help them. Because my sponsor, so the reason I'm your 10-minute speaker tonight is my friend Mark and my lifelong friend Mike sort of voluntold me, and which is awesome. You know, it's a pleasure to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. And Mike and I had the same sponsor for many years, and you know, we got yelled at both in tandem and, you know, individually multiple times, you know, and it's good. It helped make us effective members of Alcoholics Anonymous and useful members of society. Two things that I'm not sure either one of us had when we first walked in the door. And I'm an alcoholic, you know. I'm a first nighter. The first time I took a drink of alcohol, I had this physical allergy phenomenon, a craving set up. I drank way too much, and I couldn't even tell you the process of how it occurred. And then, you know, our literature talks about, in the doctor's opinion and some other place in the literature, it talks about this other thing that happens beyond that called the warping of the mind. You know, it's this obsession, the state of mind that precedes the first drink, where no matter what the consequences are, no matter what the predicament is, somehow I have this self-destructive ability to convince myself that I need to just take a couple of drinks. I just need the ease and comfort that comes at once from a few drinks. You know, and completely blocking out the fact that I have this allergy of the body. Like, once I take one drink, there's no telling when I'll stop, where I'll stop. It's a disaster. And so it was like that from the very first time I took a drink. You know, and I drank essentially with impunity for about 3 years, which is a pretty long stretch for somebody who was drinking as much and as stupidly as I was and as frequently. But that's what happened. I got in like no trouble with the law, nothing major, no big car wrecks. But for me, I didn't have like a slow descension into late stage alcoholism. It was like somebody threw the circuit breaker, and it was like, you're fine, complete disaster, you're about to die, you know, death and disaster is imminent, right? And, throughout my drinking, you know, once that switch was thrown, I started having some really big, I was in AA before somebody described it, my condition, it's the sense of impending doom. But out there, I just felt like I was running out of time, like there was a timer on a bomb that was ticking down, you know. And I felt this anxiety all the time, you know. And I was having these things at night called night terrors, and all kinds of stuff was going on. But I couldn't explain any of it because I never bothered to be a normal teenager who goes to a class and they teach you about different human emotions and all this stuff. I just had this storm going on inside of me. The only thing that would solve it was, you know, drinking to oblivion. And then, so that's what I did. It was the only solution I had. Because I couldn't even, if somebody asked me and I was sincerely trying to tell them the truth, I couldn't tell them what was going on with me because I didn't know. I didn't understand it. I knew it was terrible and it was horrible and I felt separate from every other human being on the planet. I always had this sense of What I've termed after being in Alcoholics Anonymous for a while is this thing called alcoholic loneliness. It's this abyss that even in a room full of people, even if they're praising me for an award or an achievement or something like that, I not only can't hear them, I'm completely disconnected from them and I feel completely alone. Even in the face of people saying, "We love you," I don't feel any of that. And so I carried that with me my whole life until some time after becoming a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it didn't switch on right away, and it took doing some things. You know, our 12 steps that we have here in Alcoholics Anonymous, they're not just like fun club rules that we came up with, like the Little Rascals. You know, they're these things, and the difficult thing about it is, as a newcomer coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I looked at them and they looked like club rules to me. The steps 1, 2, and 3 did not look like, if you do these, you will get out of trouble eventually. Like, this is the pathway to the end of trouble. This is the pathway to the end of isolation. This is the pathway to becoming at one with that which created you and feel like you're a part of the human race, maybe even for the first time ever. But it is. The math doesn't look right, especially for me when I'm a newcomer. Now it does. It all makes sense to me now, many years later. But when I was new, you know, and my sponsor would say, you know, go to this meeting, help put away the chairs, do all this stuff. I was like, you realize I'm going to court in like 6 weeks and I'm probably going to jail. And he's like, can you give this guy a ride home? I'm like, he's not listening to a single thing I say, this guy. He's like, it's like he's got one channel, you know, that's it. You know, he's not hearing what I'm, you know, my problems. And, but I started doing that stuff. And I remember walking into a courtroom and the judge was like, "You're fine. I'm just going to let you finish out your other thing that you violated 3 different times, and it's not a big deal," and let me walk out of the courtroom. And I couldn't believe it. Like, I was convinced I was going to jail. And all I was doing was, like, being the assistant to the assistant coffee maker, putting away chairs, going to meetings, blah, 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 blah. I wasn't doing a single thing with my attorney or doing court stuff or doing any of this other stuff. I just did what my sponsor told me to do, and stuff started to work out, you know. And that was just the beginning, you know, because my sponsor started reading the big book to me. It took him a little while to figure out I was functionally illiterate, but that sort of cleared up after a while because I was lightly toasted on both sides when I first got here. But that sort of cleaned up, and I started learning stuff. And my sponsor, you know, did a combination of things with both me and Mike and a bunch of other guys. He made us be effective members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and then he also made us go have fun because we were young. We had energy that we were going to do stuff with, either questionable things or things under direction and supervision. and he opted for category number 2. And so he had us going on ski trips and just doing all this stuff and going to the beach and surfing and doing all this stuff while we were learning how to live and be parts of society and stuff like that. And, you know, I owe a great debt to the people that took a lot of time and invested it in me. I owe a great debt to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I try to serve it well. You know, I try to be that elder statesman in my little Thursday night meeting, you know, where there's young people there. I try to do a little bit of service work. You know, I try to reach out, you know, to the newcomer, and, you know, I've been giving people rides home from these meetings. There's a lot of detox meetings around the Phoenix area and stuff like that, so I'm very grateful for my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. I would be dead if it wasn't for the people in here and the ideas contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm very grateful. Thank you.